visitors, three angels from heaven visit him, and he's so excited, and he rushes to give them the finest hospitality. He gives them fresh water for their feet and kills the fatted calf and makes the finest bread. He wants to show them that he wants them. These visitors are not quite strangers, though. They know what's happening, and they ask, "Where's your wife, Sarah?" They know his wife, Sarah, by name. Something's going on here. Often God will ask a question, not because he doesn't know, but because he does know and he wants us to know. Kind of like in Genesis 3, "Where are you, Adam and Eve?" He, of course, knew where they were. But it's so we will know that he knows. So in verse 10 in Genesis 18, "I will surely return to you at this hour, this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son." Not just talking about having a son. He will have the son. You'll hold him in your arms. Verse 11, then we are again told, and it's iterated without any doubt, Sarah and Abraham are beyond age. There's no way they can have children. It's a natural reality. It can't happen. So Sarah overhears this. And she even says, "We're all both worn out. We're old and tattered. We're going to have a child." Verse 13, "The Lord said to Abraham, 'Why did Sarah laugh and say, will we really have a child now that I'm old?'" This angel knows what's going on. Something behind the scenes, very important, is happening. And then the very important verse 14, "Is anything too hard for the Lord?" He gets right in there what's impossible, and now he's going to do the possible. It's possible with him. "Is anything too hard for the Lord?" Sarah is scared, and she lied. I didn't laugh. "Yes, you did laugh," the angel said. The angel knows what's happening. Something powerful is happening. Some say that this angel of the Lord is a pre-incarnate Christ dwelling on earth, and that could very well be true. But what is happening here is God's promise to Abraham is about to be fulfilled in real life. But first, God has to take care of something that needs to be fulfilled, and that is judgment in Sodom and Gomorrah. And that's what the theme of this message today is, judgment. And what an ugly word, particularly if it's pointed toward us. And yet, the odd thing is we all love justice. So we're going to take a deep look into this right now. Hopefully it will answer some questions. So Genesis 18, verse 16. "When the men got up to leave," in other words, they've had their visit with Abraham. "When the men got up to leave, they looked down towards Sodom." I would have not liked to have seen their eyes at that look. They had a mission. They looked down towards Sodom. "And Abraham walked along with them to see them on their way." Then verse 17, "Then the Lord said, 'Shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do? Abraham will surely become a great and powerful nation, and all nations on earth will be blessed through him. For I have chosen him so that he will direct his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing what is right and just, so that the Lord will bring about for Abraham what he has promised for him.'" Verse 20, "Then the Lord said, 'The outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is so great and their sin is so grievous that I will go down and see if what they have done is as bad as the outcry that has reached me. If not, I will know.'" I love how God is sharing his will with somebody that's united with him. And God wants to do that with us. He wants to share his will with us so we have his word. "Shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do?" Shall God hide from us what he's about to do? The answer is no. He wants us to know. Abraham, a friend of God, will know. And we must know judgment is coming. Judgment. People who belong to God need to understand this judgment. In the midst of this judgment proclamation, it's reiterated again the promise of Abraham. All the nations on earth, or peoples on earth, will be blessed through this one man. We get a glimpse into God's will for humanity in verse 19. It is to raise children to keep the way of the Lord by doing what is right and just. I like to call this the Deuteronomy 6 plan for child rearing. Deuteronomy 6, we get this whole outline. God says, listen, you're going to go into the promised land, and here's how you will succeed. It's not by the army. It's not by the economy. It's by, can you pass on my heritage to the next generation. That's it. God is concerned with generation next. And so he says, Abraham will do that. He'll do what's just and right. It's not the government's job. It's not the church's job. It's the calling of fathers and mothers. It's family. When the family breaks down, society breaks down. It's the rule. It's the way the world works. God knew this, and he put it in his law. Verse 20 then, we get God's point of view on Sodom and Gomorrah in verse 20. The Lord said, the outcry, in other words, there's got to be justice. The outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is so great, and their sin is so grievous. See, we don't look to Sodom and Gomorrah for what's right and wrong. We don't ask for their opinion. It's whose point of view is important. It's God's point of view. If we were to ask them, they'll say, well, everything's fine. This is how we do it. We are progressives. This is change. This is what we like. Surveys have shown. We've taken the polls. We have voted on it. We're modern. Isn't that kind of how we're reasoning right now in our world? Don't bully us by your higher law. You guys are haters. Who is the ultimate hater? Really? Yeah, who is the ultimate? Who wants to kill, steal, and destroy? See, the world is blind. We know that. The world is blind to it. What's behind the scenes? Who wants to tear down the fences that protect society? Who wants to bully and hate? On the other hand, who wants to protect and to provide? If you have children, one of the first things you do, you set up boundaries for them. And they don't like it, maybe, but they're protected. And that's what God does with his justice. He wants those strong fences for protection. It makes so much sense. And it's so senseless to tear down the fences that once protected us. The world will always be in confusion over this, though. And they can't help it because they're lost. We live in a lost, violent, dangerous world. The world will always be right in its own eyes. But there's a higher law that's over this world. And he's coming with a measuring line in his hand. Verse 21. I will go down to see if what they have done is as bad as the outcry that has reached me. If not, I will know. Of course, God knows, but we need to know that he knows what's happening. He said it all the way back in chapter 13, verse 13, that Sodom and Gomorrah is horrible and things going on were horrible. Obviously, God knows. This is judgment language that we need to adhere to. Romans 13 tells us that God has instituted governments to rule and to do right and good. But it's God who determines what is right and good, not the government. And people are missing that point. In fact, we're not even allowed to bring that point up. Who determines what is right and wrong? And that's really the essence of this message on judgment. Who determines right and wrong? So judgment is going to be questioned. Genesis 18, verse 22. Abraham's going to begin to question God's judgment. Verse 22. The men turned away and went toward Sodom. There they go. They're going off to Sodom. But Abraham remained standing before the Lord. Then Abraham approached him and said, will you sweep away the righteous with the wicked? That's a good question, isn't it? Verse 24, what if there are 50 righteous people in the city? Will you really sweep it away and not spare the place for the sake of 50 righteous people in it? Far be it from you to do such a thing. To kill the righteous with the wicked, treating the righteous and the wicked alike. Far be it from you. Will not the judge of all the earth do right? Here is Abraham in communication with the Lord. And in this whole idea of justice, which is really a mystery to the world. It should not be to us as believers. But to the world, they don't have a clue. And you can't really blame them in a sense. But God is ready to listen to Abraham. And Abraham knows judgment is coming. So he asks four questions. And the last question is this. Will not the judge of the earth do right? Wow, what a question. We need to ponder and just hang on to that question. It's a huge question. We should study that very carefully. Will not the judge of all the earth do right? Well, it really depends on how you define certain words. But I want to start with a question that really is another huge question. Why can a human being even ask such a question? That question should be asked. Why can somebody stand before God and wonder what's right and what is wrong? See, the world is ignorant as to the reason we can even ask that question. And when you begin to dabble in the reasons, they run fast because they don't want to know what's beyond the veil of reality for us. The world is blind to the reason that human beings care. We care so much about right and wrong. The reason is we're made in the image of God. God put that in us. He put it in us. God is a God of justice. He's a God of righteousness. And humanity just loves it. But what we don't love is this. We don't want it applied to us. Really. We don't want it applied to us. Plus, the other thing is, we want to determine what's right and wrong. We don't want a higher law over us. Once a higher law is over us, we're in trouble. So people will ignore God. They'll ignore the law. Even their own heart's crying out, get right with God. They'll still say, no way. Because it scares humanity. All of humanity wants to make its own laws. We love justice, but we have a default setting because of sin in our fallen nature that insists we declare what's right and wrong, not God. That's where the trouble lies. Justice is okay as long as we're the judge. The fruit does not fall far from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, does it? It's amazing. The key question, who defines what is right and wrong? The tree of the knowledge of good and evil. When I think about creation, in the middle of the garden were two trees. And really the central focus of life or death are in those two trees. God said, listen, you stay away from that tree of the knowledge of good and evil. It's a way of saying the tree represents who will determine what is right and wrong. As long as I determine it, you stay away, you can have the tree of life. You can have the tree of life. It's yours. It's symbolic. God is saying, I am God. I'm the creator of heaven and earth. I will define your moral standards, not you. What did Adam and Eve do? They usurped God's position. They partook of his place, really. They took his place. Now they're declaring what is right and wrong. That's sin, rebellion, and that's the trouble we are in right now. So we have this question. Will not the judge of the earth do right? It's right for Abraham to ask that to God. Everyone asks it. Even the atheists ask it. Well, how can God judge? Well, we're learning a little bit about it right here, hopefully. Let's see this question tested then. God's going to test it. He's going to let it be tested to its logical conclusion. Chapter 18, verse 26. The Lord said, verse 26, okay, if I find 50 righteous, you just have to love the Lord. He's able to put up with Abraham with these questions. It is awesome because of his grace. And he wants to show him something. Okay, Abraham, I'm following it with you. Verse 26. Okay, if I find 50 righteous people in Sodom, I will spare the whole place for their sake. That's right, isn't it? Okay. Well, then Abraham, verse 27, spoke up again. Now that I have been so bold as to speak to the Lord, though I am nothing but dust and ashes, what if the number of the righteous is five less than 50? Will you destroy the whole city because of five people? If I find 45 there, I will not destroy it. Oh, isn't that great? Verse 29. Once again, he spoke to him. What if only 40 were found there? God said, if I find 40, I will not do it. Verse 30. Then Abraham said, may not the Lord be angry, but let me speak. What if only 30 are found there? He answered, I will not do it if I find 30 there. Abraham said, now that I have been so bold as to speak to the Lord, what if only 20 can be found there? God said, for the sake of 20, I will not destroy it. Verse 32, then he said, may the Lord not be angry, but let me speak just once more. What if only 10 can be found there? He answered, for the sake of 10, I will not destroy it. When the Lord had finished speaking with Abraham, he left and Abraham returned home. 10 is, I guess, Abraham got the point. And it's so redundant, it's to hopefully help us to know God knows who the righteous are. Ultimately, we're getting ahead of the story, but there are none righteous. But we're getting ahead of the story there. So Abraham is no different than all of us. We all have eaten from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Abraham has climbed up that tree. He's way up high in it, and he can see all. And now he's questioning God because he knows right from wrong. And he knows more than God. God, surely you can't be doing this. But by God's grace, he allows this question to be asked. And God is going to do a little holy pruning while Abraham's up in the tree. And it's not going to be pretty. God's pruning shears are razor sharp. God allows the question, will the judge of all the earth do right? There's a five-step holy horticulture heaven pruning process. Five steps. The first step is this, morality. Abraham knows there's right and wrong. It's no accident that we know there is right and wrong. There isn't a human on earth that doesn't know there's right or wrong. They're in jail, they know there's a right and wrong. They're criminals, they know there's a right and wrong. They're good people, they know, everybody knows there's no one that does not know there's a right and wrong. We know it because God put it there. Animals don't have this. Humanity knows what's right and wrong, not the animal kingdom. That's what separates us, one of the things, from the animal kingdom. There's no escaping it. Romans chapter 2, verse 14 says, God put the law in our hearts. He's the one that put it there, so we know right from wrong. As long as our conscience is clear, you know, we'll get it. But if that gets seared like a hot iron, we, of course, then our consciences will be destroyed. But anyway, right and wrong is there. So the first step, God, or Abraham knows there's a right and wrong, there's morality. The second step of the pruning process is this, defense. Abraham is quick to defend what he thinks is right. We all do, don't we? We're all experts on what is right and what is wrong. Why else do we have Turco? It ain't right. You know, if you ever heard that, I mean, I've never seen an animal going to court, unless it's a kangaroo going to, you know, his court, but animals don't do it. Humans do it. We can do something as simple as step on someone's toe. That ain't right. An animal would just eat the person and not even care if it's right or wrong, but we'll have an argument. Is it right or wrong? No, it's wrong. You steal something that doesn't belong to somebody, it's not right. But in our fallen nature, we can twist the concept of right and wrong. We can pervert justice. So it's not what God, so it's really against what God says. We can say what's right even though God says it's wrong. We can pervert justice. As human beings, we do that. We do it all the time. And then we'll defend our stance. We're quick to defend our stance. So that's the second step. Abraham will defend what he thinks is right. The third step is this, rebellion. Abraham goes as far out on the limb as he can. I've seen this limb way out there. I'm going way out on the limb, and I'm going to question God. I'm going to question God. I've never seen an animal shake a paw at God. I've never seen an animal raise his claw or mandible at God. It's human beings do it, don't we? We all do it. I mean, not questioning God, but we can. The people that don't believe in God do it all the time, but I've never seen an animal do it. We are self-righteous, in other words. We're in rebellion, naturally. Abraham loves that tree. He's out on a limb, and he knows that limb will support him. I am self-righteous. I can go as far as I want. Nothing's going to stop me because I am right, and I'll defend myself. He's an expert at it, as we all are. And we will even usurp God's rightful position in our lives, declaring what God says is wrong, we'll declare it right. And the whole nation will do it. And it happens all over the world. So the third step then is Abraham's going to question God. Same old story. It started in Genesis chapter 3, questioning God. The enemy was there in the garden. God smiles. He's got his pruning shears ready. He's going to clip that tree. But he smiles because he loves us. Because he wants to get us out from behind the lie that we are right in ourselves. He wants us to get behind the lie that, yeah, we can come up with some religion and make it up ourselves. No, that we have to understand that if we're going to be righteous, it must come through him. We must understand that leads to the fourth step, and that is truth. Nothing will prune us out of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil faster than truth. God's answer to Abraham is a resounding yes. Yes, of course, the judge of all the earth will do right. I don't know if Abraham really wanted that question answered that way. Yes, I'm going to be perfectly holy. Do you really want that, Abraham? If you know what I'm talking about, you understand why that's a scary proposition. It's one of the huge differences the judge of all the earth would do right is that the judge of all the earth is the one who declares what is right and what is wrong. And that is the hard truth. So the Lord answers Abraham's question of justice with a deadly reality that only God does what is right. Yes, I'll do what is right. And that leads to the last and fifth final step. We get cut down to size, and that is justice, simple, real justice. Abraham's going to see God's justice. All the inhabitants of the earth are accountable to God. You want the judge of all the earth to do right? Okay, he'll do just that. He is just. That tree that supported Abraham is now gone. It's been trimmed out. He's now naked before God. No one is just before God. Nobody. The big question that we are not allowed to ask in our society, and most people don't even think about, who decides what is right and what is wrong? It's been ignored in the same-sex marriage issue. They don't even mention it. They can't mention it. Because once they mention it, then that stops everything. Because they're one step, they've skipped the major step. Who decides what is right and wrong? We're living in this very question in our land. Who decides? We have climbed up the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. We're bypassing God's view. We're selecting things by voting. We'll make a movie about it. We'll make a sitcom about it. We'll make music about it. Everybody will be doing it. And then it must be right. Meanwhile, God is going, I'm over here. Have you guys forgotten what is happening? And it's killing us. They can make the Padre game gay night if they want. They can make whatever, Disneyland gay day, whatever they want to do. It doesn't make it right. Because everybody is doing it. God is going to whittle it down to size eventually. He's getting ready with Sodom and Gomorrah. Verse 20, the outcry of Sodom and Gomorrah has reached my ears. Right and wrong must be judged. Now we're in chapter 19 in Genesis. The two angels arrive at Sodom. It's nighttime now. Lot invites them into his house. They refuse, and probably they don't want to hang out with Lot because, you know, he's too much Sodom in him, perhaps. Lot insists. They finally give in, and they go into Lot's house. All the men of Sodom and boys, young and old, surround the house, start banging on the door. We want, in verse 5, they call out to Lot, where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us so we can have sex with them. Literally, it means we want to know them. Now, I've read dozens of books on the homosexual groups that say to know just means we just want to know somebody. But it literally means we want to have sexual intimacy with them. Proof of that is that Lot decides to throw out his daughters instead. Get to know them. Which is a horrible thing that transpired, showing how horrible this mob thing has affected Lot. The men of Sodom will not reason. The one thing they want is their way. And the angels pull Lot back in, lock the door, and then put blindness or confusion over the entire crowd to where they thought they were smart. Now they can't even find the door anymore. And God is protecting Lot and his family. The angels strike them with confusion. So the angels ask Lot about his family. Where's your family? We got to get him out of Sodom. Verse 13, because we're going to destroy this place. The outcry of the Lord against the people is so great that he has sent us to destroy it. So Lot does what he should do. He warns his family. What's the family do? They laugh at him. What? They laugh at him. They thought it was a joke. You see, the fact that the God of all the earth exists is foreign to them. We are our own gods. We voted him out. He has nothing to do with us anymore. Verse 15, with the coming of dawn, now the sun's beginning to rise. God's judgment is going to rise with the sun. The angels urge Lot, saying, hurry, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, or you'll be swept away when the city is punished. Lot still hesitated. He's out of his mind. But by the mercy of God, the angels grab him and they get him out of there by the mercy of God only. But he's still not satisfied. They say, you got to go to the mountains. He says, no, we want by this little city, Zoar. We want to stay there because we're familiar with that city. Lot still won't give up. The angels give in. Okay, we'll let you go there. And they say something that is very interesting in verse 22 in chapter 19. A little hint to why they're after Lot. Verse 22 says this, but flee quickly, because I cannot do anything until you reach safety. In other words, there's been an intercession for Lot through Abraham. It's the only reason he's being rescued. If he's going to be declared righteous at all, it's because of the grace of God. Lot getting rescued out of Sodom. So in chapter 19, verse 23 then, judgment falls. Chapter 19, verse 23. Let's read that little section. By the time Lot reached Zoar, the sun had risen over the land. Then the Lord rained down burning sulfur on Sodom and Gomorrah from the Lord of the heavens. Thus he overthrew those cities and the entire plain, including all those living in the cities, and also the vegetation in the land. But Lot's wife looked back, and she became a pillar of salt. Verse 27. Early the next morning, Abraham got up and returned to the place where he had stood before the Lord. He looked down toward Sodom and Gomorrah, toward all the land of the plain, and he saw the dense smoke rising from the land, and the smoke like the smoke of a furnace. Verse 29. So when God destroyed the cities of the plain, he remembered Abraham, and he brought Lot out of the catastrophe that overthrew the cities where Lot had lived. Interesting stuff here. Question could be that everyone could raise, how could a loving God bring this kind of judgment? I think an important lesson, if once we understand God and once we learn of him, we must know that love and justice can never be separated. God cannot allow the horrendous things to go undone. He must bring correction, and the only way to do it is through justice. We're going to see that in just a moment. What if we were given the job to be the arbiters of justice in our land? There's many things wrong in our world. Well, let's start with, where would we start? Where would we draw the line? How about drawing the line of all the world leaders who've killed millions? I mean, just in our modern era, not to mention the ancient era, it's killed just as many, but with Hitler, Stalin, Pol Pot, Chairman Mao, there's been probably 200 million people slaughtered. Let's start with them. They need our judgment. I mean, everybody would agree with that. But maybe we should lower the bar a little lower. Let's add in the mass murderers, those who've killed the 20s, the 30s, and just devastated families on this earth. Let's lower the bar to them, but let's move the bar a little lower to include people who have robbed and maimed and pillaged our society. Let's move the bar to them. That should do it. Then we need to think, well, where should the bar go? Maybe a little lower to include criminals, abusers, neglectors, social vandals of humanity. Yeah, let's lower the bar there. Eventually, we're going to have to ask ourselves, since we're the judge, where will we draw the line? The answer is in this little paper right here from Romans chapter 3, verse 23. All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. I put this on a little piece of paper, so perhaps this week we can meditate on the concept of love and justice, not to ever let them get separated, but then to see that God has provided a way. Here, verse 23, all have sinned, that leaves no one out, and fallen short of the glory of God. That line is at the bottom. Everyone has crossed the line. Verse 24, all are justified freely by God's grace through the redemption that came by Christ Jesus. Justified means we're not justifying ourselves. Somebody else is. In other words, God is making you right. How can he do that? Well, it's a miracle. It says in verse 25, here's how he does it. God presented Christ as a sacrifice of atonement. Jesus dying on the cross pays the price that we don't have to pay for our sins. God presented Christ as a sacrifice of atonement through the shedding of his blood. Blood meaning is a symbol of life. He's paid the price. To be received by faith, just by believing, receiving. He did this to demonstrate his righteousness, to prove that God is right, because in his forbearance he had let the sins committed beforehand unpunished. You know, he sort of let the world go, but no longer. He's now laid a way out. And verse 26 then sums it up right here. He did this to demonstrate, in other words, to give a demonstration to the whole world so everybody can see it now, his righteousness at the present time, right today, so as to be just. He will always do right, and the one who justifies those who have faith in Jesus. This is so powerful. God loves and justice meet at the cross of Jesus Christ. How subtle. Sin is allowed to reign freely is the worst hate crime in the universe. Sin destroys. Sin maims. Sin makes people into idiots. Sin makes people go out of their minds with suffering. When do you ever hear sin mentioned at all in our society? so many, we're so fallen, we won't even mention it, but it kills, it steals, and it destroys. The evidence, just look around. Here God has the gospel right here in His Word that cures it all. Just look around. Maybe you know some people, and you can read God's Word. Every problem on the face of this earth is because of sin, yet not one word about it in this world. Will the judge of all the earth do right? Abraham, it's good to ask that question, and we get to listen in and learn a few things. Romans 3:23, well, all have sinned. Well, what's God going to do? Verse 24, but you're justified freely by His grace. How did that work? By the redemption that came through Jesus Christ. And it explains it in verse 25. Here's what happened. God presented Jesus as a sacrifice of atonement. And literally that means He's our mercy seat. In the Old Testament tabernacle, there was the Ark of the Covenant. The law was in there. And the mercy seat was a solid gold covering that was over it. And the angels' cherubim wings covered God's holiness. So God looks down from heaven. If He sees the law without a covering, we're dead. So He looks down from heaven. This is all symbolic, but it means something. God looks down from heaven, and now He sees the price paid, the blood over the mercy seat. And that's where the high priest on Yom Kippur, the day of covering, would put the blood of the Lamb. Now we have the blood of the Lamb, Jesus Christ, over the mercy seat. And that's what this means in verse 25. God presented Him as our mercy seat. He looks down, He sees us covered, they're free. And it's righteous, it's right, because the just price has been paid. And how does it happen then? Through faith in His blood. God did this to demonstrate His justice. Love and justice will meet. Now verse 26. God did it to demonstrate His justice at the present time, so to be just and the one who justifies those who have faith in Jesus. So I hope from this we can see, yes, love and justice can never be separated. Can we allow all the travesties to go on and just let it go? That's unloving. It's a puzzle the world can't figure out. God's got it figured out. It's through Jesus Christ. Come to Him. Come to Him. That you don't have to know anything. You don't have to have all the answers. Just yield and bow. He will make everything right. But you have to first come to Him by faith, and that's exactly what it says. He will heal the Sodom out of us. He will mend those broken pieces that are in because of sin out of us. He will heal.